You're listening to Simpler One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works with co-hosts Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. Today we feature a conversation with Adam Mason about a strategic campaign in Iowa led by Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, also called ICCI. They want a moratorium on any new and expanded hog farms where thousands of hogs are confined in very small pens.
If you love eating a meal with some tasty pulled pork, as I have, then by all means listen to this podcast. And if you frequently pick up some quick food at fast food chains, stay tuned. This podcast links those food choices to the factory farms, which highlight deep ecological and economic problems with the global food supply system. That system is a complex one that starts on farms and finds its way to your plate. I grew up on an Iowa farm, and I remember the first time I saw a cattle lot that went on and on and on as we drove by it. The manure was pooled at one end, and boy, did we hurry to roll up the car windows when we drove by to keep out the smell. But after that boyhood experience, you know, it would be years later before I began to understand how farms were increasingly being run like industrial businesses. And the more that agriculture became agribusiness, the more the farm animals took a hit. Increasingly, beef, dairy, pigs, and chickens were moved off open pastures and free ranges. Instead, they were confined to feedlots and small pens on supersized factory farms, meaning that just as in a factory, just as a factory puts together in its product piece by piece and step by step, so the animals were fed and treated in a machine-like computerized process that produces a marketable, in some ways it's remarkable too, but that produces a marketable product in a set number of days. As you listen to this podcast, think about how you participate in this food supply system that is ruining the health of both planet and people. And consider how what you eat gives you enormous leverage to bring positive change.
Greetings, Lee, from Paso Robles, California, and Simple Living Works.
I greet you, Jerry, from San Diego and Jubilee One Earth Economics. Jerry, we may just be on the cusp of a major revolution here in how food is grown, both plants and animals, and what people eat. Here's what I read just this week. It was a report of a commission called EAT, Lancet Commission, that came out this January, not 2019, with a planetary health diet. Now, it's called that because it's a diet that simultaneously describes for us food that is healthy for the planet to grow and for people to eat. This commission says that a global agricultural revolution is just as necessary as the reduction of fossil fuel use if we're going to reduce Earth's fever and engage all causes of climate change. In addition to this report, the energy is also bubbling up from farmers and people in the street. In the same month, January 2019, 35,000 Germans marched in Berlin to say they were sick and tired of industrial agriculture. The procession was led by 170 farmers who drove their tractors off the farms to Berlin to participate in the march. Well, back to the Lancet Commission, it said, food is the single strongest lever to optimize human health and environmental sustainability on Earth. That's a strong statement. And this podcast helps us to use that lever better. So I'm excited, Jerry, by this interview that you had, and how we can, and also excited that we can share it. It really contributes to this food revolution and focuses on the campaign in the largest pork producing state, Iowa, to allow no more industrial hog farms and not to add any on to the ones that already exist. Iowa is certainly strategic in this regard, not only because of all the hogs it raises, but because of its location between the two great rivers, the Missouri that defines its western border and the Mississippi that does the same on the east. So as a result, Iowa is the second greatest polluter of the Gulf of Mexico. Ugh. Agricultural chemicals and hog and chicken manure run off the land into waterways, and then they end up in one of the two big rivers that eventually go on down to the Gulf of Mexico. And there, all this runoff creates an enormous dead zone, as it's called, in the Gulf, where no marine life can live. Well, you and I have both lived in Iowa, Jerry, so there's a certain connection we feel to all of this. But you did the interview, so why don't you take it from here?
Well, for clean air and water, Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement is teaming up with the Sahara Club, as well as county and city governments. This matters to anyone who eats pork or chicken or cares about the earth. Adam Mason serves as the State Policy Organizing Director for ICCI, and here's our conversation recorded this January. Well, Adam, I'm pleased to be a member of ICCI as well as a member of Sierra Club, and so your work is of great interest to me. So, Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. Tell us a little bit about it and what some of the current projects are, please. Maybe a little about the history.
Sure. And thank you for having me. I really appreciate this. Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement is a 40-plus-year-old organization founded in 1975, founded around the beliefs that everyday people, when given the opportunity, can be a powerful force for justice. You know, over the years, we've been a multi-issue membership organization, and we've worked on issues ranging from racial justice to economic justice, and including environmental and climate justice as well today. You know, in the early days, CCI focused a lot on economic justice issues and other just community-based issues, you know, communities that were in need of local health centers or working to remove blighted buildings from their neighborhoods. That early work transitioned into a focus in Iowa's metro areas on the practice of redlining, where banks would not make mortgages into low-income and predominantly into communities of color neighborhoods. In the early 80s, that work expanded when organizers used those lessons learned in metro areas and applied it to keeping family farmers on the farm during the farm crisis. And that's really when we truly became a statewide organization, working with family farmers throughout the early 80s during the farm crisis. In the 90s, that work transitioned to supporting beginning farmer programs and working on other farm policy. And in the mid-90s, that's also when we saw kind of the influx of factory farms here in Iowa. And so we were on the front lines working with family farmers who were engaged as independent family farmers in the hog industry to fight that corporate control and consolidation of the hog industry. And we're obviously still fighting factory farms today. It is the issue that a majority of our members care about in both rural and urban areas. You know, we've approached it as an issue that impacts rural communities. Again, the family farmers who have been pushed out of raising hogs, to those rural neighbors who are forced to deal with the air pollution that emanates from factory farms, as well as the water pollution that impacts every Iowan, whether they drink water from a well in their rural community or rural water, to those of us even here in Des Moines, where Des Moines Water Works serves over a half million people and has trouble providing safe, clean drinking water because of pollution that's coming in part from factory farms upstream. We are still a multi-issue organization, still working on issues of racial justice, including racial profiling and immigration reform, economic justice, you know, making sure that there's a safety net for our communities that includes health care for all, livable wages, and ensuring the strength of Medicare and Medicaid. And of course, factory farms are the predominant area of our environmental justice work, and we're also getting into climate justice, you know, taking on the control that big utilities have over our energy system and trying to democratize that and ensure a just transition to 100% renewable energy. I mentioned that we're a dues-paying membership organization. We have over 5,000 individual dues-paying members here in Iowa. And we communicate with about another 12,000 Iowans who have taken action on our issues at some point over the last several years.
These issues you're talking about are much bigger than Iowa. I mean, I was reading that Iowa is the second biggest polluter of the Mississippi River Basin. So the pollution from the factory farms in Iowa is not only affecting people in Iowa, but people downstream.
You're absolutely correct. You know, and that's something that here in Iowa, we can have an oversized impact, not just on our state, but on our country as a whole. And that plays out in a number of ways. You know, you mentioned the dead zone and Iowa's oversized impact on that. That is due in large part to the fact that Iowa is the number one hog-producing state in the nation, with approximately 26 million hogs at any given point in factory farms here in Iowa. We're also the number one egg-producing state, so we have more chickens, more laying hens in confinement than any other state in the country and produce more eggs than any other state in the country. Along with that, we have to feed those livestock, and so Iowa is number one, the number one corn-producing state, and near the top, usually in the top three in terms of soy-producing states. Again, those crops are raised in a fashion that is not sustainable for our land. This monoculture farming is really become an extractive model of farming here in Iowa that's dominated by the seed and fertilizer companies that are reaping profits from low grain prices, while farmers are stuck in a system that is pollution intensive and continues to send some of our best resources, you know, Iowa's valuable topsoil, downstream to the dead zone with both natural and chemical fertilizers attached, you know, largely in the form of that factory farm manure or synthetic fertilizers. So that's a huge concern. Now, on the other hand of that, we can also play an outsized impact in promoting the solutions to these problems, both in moving forward with a better system of agriculture, a system of agriculture that works for farmers, but also works for workers in our environment and eaters. And we also have an outsized impact in promoting those solutions with policymakers. And I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with, Iowa is one of the first in the nation states. We have the first in the nation caucuses. And so we will continue to see presidential candidates coming to Iowa, listening to Iowans about the issues that we face here, the factory farm issue and the water crisis that we're facing in Iowa, as well as our solutions to fix those. So we want to play a big role in promoting the solution.
Indeed. I want to get into more of that, Adam, but first of all, I want people to understand how this happens. I mean, the amount of manure produced by chickens and hogs is astronomical. So what is done with that manure?
Right. So, you know, I mentioned the 26 million hogs living in confinement. Those hogs largely create what we call liquid manure. It's you know, the urine and feces from the livestock are trapped in a 8-foot deep concrete pit below the building that the animals spend their entire life in, you know, crammed in close quarters. That manure then is, while it sits in this concrete pit, undergoes a chemical change and becomes really a toxic substance that's emanating ammonia and hydrogen sulfide and other noxious gases. Oftentimes, if we see a power outage at a factory farm, the livestock will die because the fans in the building without power are not able to vacuum the gases out of there and the livestock suffocate. But specifically to the water pollution, because of Iowa's cropping systems, there's only two times a year when these factory farms are able to drain the manure out of that pits and dump it untreated onto Iowa's farm fields. That is it late in the fall after the crops have come out and early in the spring before crops go in. During these small windows, we see custom applicators applying this factory farm manure, dumping it on farm fields, again, untreated, largely in haphazard ways where they're not concerned about potential runoff. They're oftentimes applying right up to somebody's property line, the nearest neighbor's property line, or oftentimes up to a neighboring stream bank. So even when they're not doing that, Iowa's farm fields are largely tiled farm fields, and Iowa's tiling system is essentially a large system of underground pipes and networks that over the years have been installed to drain excess moisture from these farm fields so that they're able to raise all of this corn and soy. Those serve as essentially a funnel to move all of this manure-laced water out of the farm field and into the nearest waterway. That then feeds larger and larger streams, ending up in the Mississippi and moving its way all the way down to the dead zone.
So this isn't fertilizer.
No, you know, the industry does like to claim that the manure generated by these factory farms is a fertilizer. That is true. It could be utilized as a fertilizer. But what we have, because there's such concentration of these factory farms in certain areas of the state, is that there's more manure than the land can actually utilize. And so this waste product is now being over-applied and, like I said, dumped on our farm fields untreated. It's estimated that the 26 million hogs create over 22 billion gallons of liquid manure a year. On average, a hog will create as much waste as 2.5 humans. And so those 26 million hogs here in Iowa at any given point are creating as much, if not more, waste than the city of L.A.
And I also understand that this causes air pollution.
That's correct. You know, I mentioned a little bit that as this manure sits in these concrete pits underneath the buildings, it undergoes a chemical change. When you have, hundreds of thousands or millions of gallons of liquid waste sitting in a concrete pit for 6 months at a time, it undergoes certain chemical changes. Part of that is a reaction that emits ammonia gases, hydrogen sulfide, and other particulate matter that can be very harmful, not only for the animals, but for surrounding communities. There have been numerous studies here in Iowa that show living within a several-mile radius of a factory farm can induce higher asthma rates, other respiratory ailments such as COPD, and higher rates of cancers. So this is truly a potential health crisis as well that our rural communities here in Iowa are facing.
Well, there have been some efforts to control this water and air pollution, but most of them have been voluntary. And so, but you want to take that one step further.
That's correct. You know, for us, we try and tackle the factory farm issue in a three-pronged strategy. One is we work with local communities to stop the construction and expansion of factory farms. So when a rural community doesn't want a factory farm in its neighborhood, we work with them to organize to stop the construction of those factory farms. But unfortunately, a lot of these communities and local decision makers at the county level have had their hands tied, which gets us to our second prong, which is enforcement. We believe that the rules and laws that are on Iowa's books should be enforced. Unfortunately, Iowa's Department of Natural Resources, which is tasked with policing factory farms, currently doesn't enforce the law to its fullest extent. So we're constantly pushing our Department of Natural Resources to fully enforce the law. But what it really comes down to is our third strategy point of getting better policy. We know that to truly rein in the factory farm industry and promote a system of farming that works for our farmers and works for workers and our consumers and our environment, we need to change the laws that are on the books. That includes giving counties local control, the ability to say no and put that final decision in a community's hands who knows what's best for its community. But even before that, what we need right now and what we are pushing statewide here in Iowa is a moratorium on factory farms. We have too many. We've seen our water crisis continue to get worse and worse year after year, with over 750 impaired or polluted waterways now across the state. And so what we're calling for statewide is a moratorium on any new or expanding factory farm construction. We have been going county to county, organizing our members and other supporters to ask their counties to sign on to this effort as well. And so far, 23 of Iowa's 99 counties have passed a resolution to send a message to state legislators and our governor that the time for stronger regulations, and even some calling for a moratorium with us now.
Are we getting any help on this from DC, from the EPA?
Unfortunately, our current administration and the current Environmental Protection Administration seems, very far away, and we all can recognize the dysfunction that we see daily in Washington, D.C. So we aren't getting a whole lot of help there. We recently, at Iowa CCI, held a meeting with our Region 7 administrator, of the Environmental Protection Administration. Iowa is part of Region 7 of the EPA, because we are asking, going back to our second strategy point of enforcing the rules and laws that are on the books, we've been asking the EPA to ensure that Iowa's DNR is enforcing the Clean Water Act as it applies to factory farms. We believe that they have not been because prior to 5 years ago, the Iowa DNR had no program for inspecting every factory farm here in Iowa on a routine basis. They weren't investigating manure spills in a regular fashion around the state, and they weren't issuing fines and penalties that deter pollution. We've had a petition in front of the EPA asking them to crack down on Iowa's DNR and to fully enforce the Clean Water Act. Unfortunately, we anticipate that petition will be dismissed here in the near future, again, signaling to us that right now our best venue for achieving action is really focusing on both the local and statewide level here in Iowa. Again, really working with communities to stop factory farms from building and putting pressure on state legislators and our governor to enact a moratorium on factory farms.
We'll return momentarily to our conversation about ICCI's efforts to gain a moratorium on big ag animal confinements. We invite you to travel with One Earth Jubilee to the Jubilee Circles in Mexico. Rachel Mill Houghton will be leading the next delegation, and we want you to be part of it. Going to sea is the best way to understand ways that resistance to unsustainable multi-earth living is being practiced by people in the Mexican states of Puebla and Chiapas. It's inspiring to see the ways One Earth Living is being shaped by people in Jubilee Circles and the many low-income and indigenous peoples with whom they work. Let us know of your interest. You're sure to have questions. We'll give you the best answers we can so that you can make a decision that's right for you. But for our part, we encourage you to come with us and see for yourself. You'll go to fascinating places tourists never go, and a few they do. Let us hear from you. Now let's return to our conversation with Adam. Well, now, Iowa, when I was younger, was what we called a purple state. We had both Democrats and Republicans in our Washington delegation and in the governor's house and the legislature. More recently, it's become a very red state. And then in the election just recently, there were some Democrats elected in the congressional delegation. How is it looking in the State House, and at the same time also mentioned that the efforts of the Democrats in Iowa have not been nearly as effective as the ICCI would like them to be.
That's correct. I have always viewed Iowa as a very purple state as well. Historically, we've had great representation from both sides of the aisle. I think Iowa's two longtime senators, Senator Harkin and Senator Grassley, were recognized a little bit for, their independent streaks and for working together. And that over the last 10 years has changed for sure, as we saw, Senator Ernst take Senator Harkin's seat, and as up until this most recent election, as you point out, having three out of our four Congress people Republicans, and now having that shift. So we currently still have the two Republicans representing Iowa in the U.S. Senate, but also having now three Democratic Congress people here in Iowa, and only Steve King, who faced the challenge of his life. Unfortunately, those shifts that we saw at the congressional level did not take hold at our state house level. Iowa's state legislature is still controlled by the Republican Party. There is a smaller majority in the state House. The Democrats were able to pick up seats, but it is currently a 54-46 Republican majority in our state House. It is a 32-18 majority in our state Senate, so a little bit wider margin there. And of course, Governor Kim Reynolds won re-election over the Democrat Fred Hubble in November. Now, we feel that's due in part, you know, I mentioned that the state House Democrats picked up seats, and we feel that those seats that were picked up were largely in suburban areas, you know, the suburban Des Moines and Cedar Rapids and Waterloo, Cedar Falls. This is a huge concern for us because, over the past 20 years, as we've seen the explosion of the factory farm crisis across the state, this has happened during both Republican and Democratic administrations. You know, going back to Governor Tom Vilsack, he helped author part of the bill that opened the door to factory farms back in 1995. And while he was governor, he did veto some very bad legislation, but also was not proactive in addressing this issue. Over the last 20 years, a concern of ours has been that the Democratic Party, as they've continued to lose some of these seats in predominantly rural areas, they haven't been able to address these rural issues in a meaningful way. And when they have, I feel that the folks that we talk to on a regular basis in rural areas feel like they have campaigned on the issue but have not governed on the issue. So they feel betrayed, and I think that's why, you know, if we look back at the rise of Trump and Trumpism across the state of Iowa, Hillary Clinton only won 7 of Iowa's counties. Trump won the other 92. You look back to President Obama, he was winning 11 to 15 counties. And if you look back at Iowa's last Democratic governors, Chet Culver in 06 and Tom Vilsack before him, they were routinely winning 62, 63, 64, about two-thirds of Iowa's counties because they were campaigning on issues in a meaningful way, addressing the concerns of not just urban but also rural folks. And so for us, that means that Democratic candidates, to be effective, need to really dig in and address this factory farm issue that's decimating our rural communities, and then also follow through so that they're governing as they campaign.
You do have some allies, Adam. For example, the Sierra Club. How are you working with your allies?
Yeah, so I had mentioned, you know, this de-delegation petition that we have in front of the Environmental Protection Agency. We are in partnership in that de-delegation petition. So the Sierra Club of Iowa is a co-petitioner in that case. We routinely also partner with both local Sierra Club chapters around the state and the statewide Sierra Club organization for local mobilizations, engaging community members, education events, and of course, I'm happy to state that going into this coming legislative session, every Sierra Club chapter here in Iowa has signed on in support of the moratorium that we're pushing for at the State House. They will be considered co-signers in a joint letter that we'll be delivering to all 150 legislators at the State House, and we look forward to mobilizing in joint lobby days and other events where we can really get out and educate our legislators and let them know how important a moratorium on factory farms really is. The Sierra Club has been an invaluable partner in helping us build the momentum across the state.
Excellent. Now, let's take a broader look. We've focused on Iowa. We've seen the problem. We've seen the work that ICCI is doing. Do you see some trends nationally? I mean, there are other rural states that are probably facing some similar dilemmas. Can you give us a little broader stroke?
Yeah, so I'll start here in the heartland. Iowa isn't the only state that is obviously fighting factory farms. We work with allies both farmer-based organizations, community-based organizations, and Sierra Club organizations in surrounding states like South Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, Missouri, Illinois, and the like. More and more of our states in the heartland are realizing the dangerous impacts that factory farms can bring to our communities and standing up to say no. What we're also doing is kind of sharing best practices. So, you know, some of the states I mentioned here in the Midwest have local control, so their local decision makers have more authority to deny those factory farms when they want to build in a community, either in the form of zoning ordinances or health ordinances. But some don't, and so we're often sharing common strategies and tactics for building a bigger base of folks who don't want to see factory farms in their community. Nationally, I think, you know, if we look to North Carolina is another state that up until the mid-90s, when we saw CAFOs explode in Iowa, was actually the number one hog-producing state in the country. In North Carolina, obviously, it's a coastal state, not a great place to build factory farms, and that's why they have a moratorium there on the construction of new manure pits. Because of hurricanes and flooding that has flooded manure lagoons there from factory farms. Those CAFOs in North Carolina also tended to locate predominantly in communities of color, specifically in African-American communities. And so what we've seen over the last year in North Carolina is a whole slew of nuisance lawsuits where plaintiffs are receiving million-dollar settlements for the nuisance that their communities have had to face, forcing factory farms and specifically Smithfield to pay up for the damage that they've caused in folks' lives. We're also in communication with folks out in Oregon, where they're seeing an influx of mega dairies, you know, dairies where they want to hold 10,000 to 20,000 dairy cattle at any given moment. That's just too many cattle to have in confinement. And so organizations in Oregon are standing up and saying, you know, and that they need a moratorium on those mega dairies there. And of course, California, in the Central Valley, there's a number of mega dairies and giant feedlots there as well. One of the schemes that we've heard about in California that we're watching out for here in Iowa and across the Midwest is what's called a manure-to-energy scheme, where they try and capture the methane gases that come off of manure lagoons and transfer it into what they call clean energy. Unfortunately, this is a false energy solution. If you capture this method of energy capture is highly inefficient. It's oftentimes largely subsidized. The equipment to do this is very expensive, and so taxpayers end up footing the bill. Lastly, this does nothing to address the nitrate or phosphorus that's in the liquid manure, and so it does nothing to address the water pollution concerns associated with liquid manure. But that's something that we know that groups on the ground in California are fighting as well and are on the watch for here in Iowa.
Thank you so much, Adam. To read more about Adam's organization, go to iowacci.org. So, Adam, anything, final words you'd like to share with us?
Well, I'd just like to encourage your listeners to get involved. We believe that that's what it's truly going to take to win the changes that we need. We've got the solutions. What we need is more people power to get those solutions done. That's what it's really going to take, is just more everyday folks standing up, speaking out, and demanding the changes that they want to see in their communities and their states. So look for an organization that, you know, if you can't join Iowa CCI or your local Sierra Club chapter, find another organization that's working on these issues and get involved.
You've been listening to part two of our conversation with Adam Mason of ICCI. In future episodes, we'll hear, why is inequality such a problem and what can we do about it? And we have other places to put our retirement funds other than Wall Street. Have you listened to our recent episodes? In November, we heard from two women leaders of the Jubilee Circles in Mexico, their projects, and the changes they're bringing to their communities. In December, we heard about fair trade in schools and congregations. In January, we heard about the Safe Harbors Network welcoming immigrants near the San Diego-Tijuana border. Do listen. You're sure to pick up some thoughts you'll value. We certainly did as we created those episodes. By the way, in 2019, we plan to produce one episode per month. Also, please subscribe to my Simpler Living Daily Nudge to get quick reminders of our blogs, our podcast episodes, and other intriguing happenings and events, such as Non-Conform Freely celebrations, ways to honor rites of passage on holidays without consumerism. Please tell us your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on the Facebook's pages. Time to wrap up this episode. Please subscribe to our Jubilee Economics One Earth and Simple Living blogs. When you're a subscriber, you'll be told when we post something new. Subscriptions are free. Subscribe to our blogs through our websites. You can also subscribe to this podcast under the names The Common Good Podcast and Simple Living Works at iTunes or your favorite podcast service. Urge your friends to do the same. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works with co-host Lee Van Ham of Jubilee One Earth Economics, wishing you well as we strive together to bring simpler One Earth living into being for the common good. Simply live, learn to live simply so others can live.